The Education Gadfly Show starts now. Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, here with my co-host, still smarting after not being asked to join the Baker Commission, Rick Hess. Welcome, Rick.
Dude, I am still bitter.
I know. You look bruised.
I am bruised. I want to be a Washington wise guy.
Yeah, someday.
Or not wise guy. I guess what do they call them? Wise guys are more like Brooklyn and you put a cap on somebody.
Those are my people.
Yes, yes.
Right.
So what do we
old
call
hands.
Wise men.
Wise men.
Not wise guys so much.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the Goodfellas? I think, right, wasn't the book that Goodfellas was based on was called Wise Guy?
Huh, I did not know that.
I might be mistaken, though.
Well, Rick, there's a lot of buzz here in Washington on Capitol Hill. Of course, freshman legislators are checking out their new digs, getting their pictures taken. A controversial figure, Trent Lott, retook a GOP leadership role, defeating former Education Secretary Lamar Alexander. And, of course, Hoyer and Murtha are duking it out for the House Majority Leader spot. But what I really want to talk about, Rick, is Borat. Have you seen it? What do you think?
Yeah, baby. Been there. Liam, what was your take?
I liked it. I thought it started off well and then kind of went down.
I was underwhelmed myself. For all the buzz and all the talk, you know, like the whole 7-minute extended him and his fat friend being naked thing didn't do so much. And it wasn't even that funny. And it was staged and it was fake. And, you know, what I'm actually astonished is you read in the paper about how he made people reveal their prejudices and how you saw what thugs Americans were. And actually, Jolene and I are sitting there watching it, and all we're thinking is how incredibly tolerant it shows Americans are nowadays, how eager even folks in the South are to try to avoid giving offense. And in fact, if this was the best stuff the guy could get after 18 months going around the country trying to provoke people, it wasn't that much. The best lines were him speaking to a camera, you know, off the side, like when he calls when he's making fun of Alan Keyes. Like, that was good stuff.
Well,
and when he says, sexy time.
Well, look, you know, very optimistic sentiments from you about our country, although I do think you just offended the entire region of the South.
I like this, except, you know, and for instance, when he gets up and he says, you know, may George Bush suck the blood of all the Iraqi women, men, and children, the cheers are actually quite half-hearted.
Interesting.
Not nearly as enthusiastic as the accounts had led me to believe.
Well, if you have any comments about Borat, send us a letter at letters@edexcellence.net. Like to know what you think and if you agree with Rick's take on the social commentary of this movie. All right. Well, let's get going. A lot on our agenda today. Of course, we will play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. We've got an interview, a very special interview with a student today. And then finally, in-house weirdo Liam will enlighten and then baffle us with a little education news of the weird. So let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Three topics, 90 seconds each. Jen, kick us off.
All right, topic one. As you said, Mike, a lot is happening on Capitol Hill. Of course, the first thing one wonders is, how will this affect No Child Left Behind?
It's the first thing I wonder.
I think it's the first thing everyone wonders.
That's right. Forget about Iraq. This is what really matters.
Republicans will elect their House Minority Leader later this week, and while NCLB supporting Boehner is out in front, some others, like Mike Pence, would be far less helpful when reauthorization rolls around. Thoughts?
Well, this is interesting, Rick. You know, you've got Mr. No Child Left Behind, John Boehner, who, of course, was the chairman of the House Education Committee, was one of the authors of No Child Left Behind, duking it out with Mike Pence, who's a conservative Republican, who is very proud and has been this week bragging about how he has voted against funding for No Child Left Behind. So there is some question. You know, we've gone on record saying that the Washington consensus is intact, that the NCLB consensus is intact no matter what happens in this election. What do you think? Have we been wrong?
Well, I mean, the first thing is, I don't know why we're talking nearly that much about who's going to be the minority leader. I mean, the Dems are going to drive this thing. George Miller is more of an NCLB hawk than anybody in the Republican caucus, McKeon or Boehner or the rest of them. I mean, actually, it seems to me the likelihood that, you know, that Miller and Kennedy will get together at the administration and in a show of bipartisanship will try to get NCLB done in 07 is actually higher than it was before the election and worrisome because NCLB, you know, its aspirations are nice, its hearts are in the right place, but it's a law with a whole lot of design problems. And I think the bigger problem right now is that folks are going to re-up this thing for 5 years as is. I mean, that's a bigger problem than the fact that you know, there's going to be fragmentation on it.
Right. Well, you wrote a piece lately about how everybody's saying that, well, the law is fine, implementation is the problem. What's the problem with implementation is the problem?
The problem is that you can't implement a law in which you punt it on all the hard decisions. If you say, here's an example, you got to have school choice, even though the bell's out, you got to have school choice, but and we're supposed to get these kids in schools that have failed to make adequate early progress for 2 years in other schools, but there's nothing about how this is going to happen, incentives to help it happen, or tools to build capacity to make it happen. You know what? I don't know what it means to implement it ineffectively.
Very nice. Second topic, Jen.
I don't know. That was kind of heavy, man. We got to lighten this up heavy. A little bit.
Yeah. Hey, you know, our listeners actually like some content.
Says who?
Well, okay. I know of one listener who likes content. We appreciate you listening out there.
All right. Topic two, Rick, starts with a shameless plug. The recently released Fordham report, How Well Are States Educating Our Neediest Children, shows that overall the nation's doing a lousy job. But as a group, the Midwest is particularly noxious. Almost every Midwestern state has made no educational gains in the test scores of their low-income and minority students. What's the deal?
Huh. So does the premise of this question require that I accept the Fordham report on how well our state's educating our neediest children at
Absolutely.
Face value? Am I allowed to quibble with some of the indicators?
No.
Which the designers of this report chose to include?
No, I'll turn your mic off.
That's right. And furthermore, Rick, what you're referring to are some of our education reform indicators, which of course you can quibble with. Those are matters of judgment. What we're talking about here is just using basic NAEP data to look at whether or not states are making progress at the proficient level, getting poor minority kids to that level, whether they're making statistically significant gains or not.
And are they?
And the answer is some states are. There are 8 states that are making moderate gains. You know, for California, for example, gains for low-income kids and Hispanic kids across reading, math, and science, African-American in math. So there are 8 states that made that level of progress. Another, I think, 21 or 23 around the country. But here's the deal. In the Midwest, there's a huge hole where none of the states from Illinois over to Oklahoma, up to Utah, over to Wisconsin are making any progress.
Now, why is that?
Well, that's what we asked you.
Is that because Fordham is based in Ohio? You guys are ground zero in the
Well, it turns out that Ohio, Indiana, and Michigan did make some progress. Mm. So they're on that eastern edge. But if you look at states like Missouri, like Illinois, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Kansas, you're seeing no gains. So here's the deal. When I look at this, I think of a couple of things. One is it is true that racial isolation is worse in the Midwest than other places. We know that from the Harvard Civil Rights Project. Is that a possibility? The other thing, though, is that these states just have not embraced education reform. Mm. I mean, they are – they've got lousy standards. They don't have very many charter schools. They've set the bar low when it comes to No Child Left Behind. Unlike other regions and other states, they are not embracing tough-minded reform.
Oof. So what does this mean for national standards, Mike?
I wasn't even going to go there. But, seriously, I am curious. Someday we'll talk about why is it, for example, that Missouri is less of an education reform state than, say, Florida? And why is it so easy for some of these states to ignore their minority and their low-income populations? But we will have to wait for another day.
These are good questions. Although, in more interesting case study might be why do some folks think that Massachusetts is a leading reform state but not Connecticut? Given how similar they are geographically.
Well, because Massachusetts has actually made gains for its poor and minority kids.
But why is that?
Well, right. That's okay, I see.
There we go.
Nice. Jen.
All right. Final topic. Yes. I'm not really sure that was much of a debate, but we'll try again.
That's because Rick struggles to find opinions on most pressing matters in education reform.
Or at least on Fordham reports, baby.
All right.
It's good. You explained it. A listener who had not read the report can now get a distilled abstract very quickly from your thoughtful and enlightening comments.
Okay, Jen, take it away.
All right, final topic. Reg Weaver, president of the National Education Association, which has just this week strung up some lovely, glittering Christmas lights, recently penned an article that called for public education to be more like Southwest Airlines. In particular, Weaver pointed out that Southwest's success is derived from the company's avoidance of merit pay, and he insinuates for schools to do the same. Pretty logical argument, right, Rick?
I think the argument's got points, but I want to know a little more about these Christmas lights. What's the story with these?
The story is that yesterday walking home, I noticed that the NEA had union Christmas light hangers outside.
Nice.
Stringing up Christmas lights. And they're great. They're the kind that kind of twinkles from afar.
Oh.
So the lights, like certain lights will blink at certain times to create the twinkle effect. It's bright white lights everywhere.
Oh, that's so cheerful. We can all go carol outside the NEA.
Yeah.
I presume these are multi-hued lights?
Okay, Rick.
What?
Let's talk about Southwest Airlines and this ridiculous analogy.
Oh,
Reg Weaver trying to say that the public education establishment is akin to Southwest Airlines. Tell me how ridiculous that is.
Yeah, that's pretty...
Rick, do I have to do all the work around here? What is this? Okay, let me offer one idea, right?
Yes, please.
Okay, Southwest Airlines was born in large part out of the airline deregulation, right? That's partly why it helped to become competitive, right? NEA is all about keeping our monopoly in education regulated and a monopoly.
Oh, Mike, you've been believing that right-wing propaganda again. The NEA is utterly comfortable with both competition and deregulation. It's just they want to make sure that it's done intelligently and with attention to the needs of students. And in fact, I thought the most interesting thing about Weaver's op-ed piece was that – and I'm not sure if none of the proofreaders over at NEA noticed it, but he accidentally seemed to call for differential pay for folks going into more difficult-to-staff schools.
How is that?
Which is actually not part of the NEA party line. Hmm. So, we can look at this as at least an incremental step by the NEA leadership – and endorsing the notion that people should be paid based on how challenging their work is and how good they do.
What happened to the Rick Hess I used to know and love? I mean, come on. You know, the
setup
Southwest
was too tough. You can't play it. The setup was – you need a straight setup to play the Southwest thing.
charter schools are the Southwest Airlines of the education industry.
Well, but the point's not who is the airline. The point is that potentially if chartering were actually done the way we talk about it, it could create the opportunity – for the Southwest and the and its fellow kind of interesting firms to emerge.
All right, that is it for Pardon the Gadfly. Now we turn to a special interview this week. Let's take a listen. Today we have on the show with us Mandy, the winner of the 2006 Miss Valley Girl pageant. She is here to comment on a recent development in New Zealand, where school officials and this is very interesting. School officials have decided to allow students to use so-called text speak, the language that teenagers use to text message each other on their cell phones, even when they are taking tests. Mandy, welcome to the Education Gadfly Show.
Like, thanks a lot, Mr. Petrilli.
Sure, Mandy. Well, it's real nice to have you here.
LOL.
Oh, I know what that one means. Laughing out loud.
No, silly. In your case, it means lots of love.
Okay. All right. I see. Okay. Well, thank you, Mandy. That's very nice.
NP. That means no problem, Mr. Petrilli, in case you didn't know.
Okay. Very good. All right. So anyways, I want to ask you, Mandy, what you think about this whole thing in New Zealand. I mean, I know that text messaging is a quick and easy way to communicate with your friends, but to use it on school tests, I mean, this is like you're answering a question about George Washington and using text speak in your answer. Don't you think that's a little out of the line?
Well, I mean, like, I don't even know what the BFD is. I mean, I can probably spell better texting than I can in real English. So, I mean, like, I don't see why I can't do it on a school test.
Yeah, well, I guess that's kind of my point, right? I mean, kids should learn real English, and they won't do that if they're completing all their assignments in text speak.
I mean, it's just because we're, like, young, and, like, all the older people don't really get it, you know? It's, like, it happens with, like, new technology all the time. Like, I mean, like, grown-ups got, like, really worried when, like, Lance Armstrong walked on the moon. I mean, just because it was, like, so weird for them. But, I mean, they got used to it.
Yes, yes, yes. We won't even go there. Well, I think we should move on here, though.
Oh, BTW, Mr. Petrilli, I get a 1500 on my SAT, so, like, I don't want you to think I'm, like, stupid or something.
Wow, Mandy, a 1500, that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, totally. Like, I mean, like, my writing wasn't so great, but the part with the bubbles was, like, really easy. So, I mean, like, I totally rocked it.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me get this straight. So you mean you took the test after they added the writing section?
Well,
actually now the score is out of 2400.
NC.
NC?
No comment.
Okay. Well, we shall move on then. So tell us some of your favorite text messaging phrases, Mandy.
Okay. So I can totally do that. Let's see. There's BRB, of course, which everybody uses like all the time. And I particularly like that one. And when I'm talking to Jeremy, my boyfriend, I like to use EOD. That means end of discussion because he's usually such a sweetie. But like, so I stick with KOTL, which is kiss on the cheeks.
Oh, well, how nice. How nice. Wait, what was BRB? I don't think I got that one.
Be right back, Mr. Petrilli.
Oh, be right back. Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, like, he gets jealous a lot. And, like, this one time in our family and home class, like, we had to, like, have a fake husband and a fake baby. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, like, it's just really like an egg, you know, that you have to, like, carry around and, like, take care of. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I was, like, married to Tony. And, you know, it was just fake. I mean, like, we're, like, dating. We're not, like, married or anything. I'm, like, mm-hmm. way too young for that. But, like, Tony was all joking around. He was, like, hella funny and, like, dropped our egg. And I was like, ROTFL.
Sorry, not catching you. What's that?
ROTFL. It means rolling on the floor laughing, Mr. Petrilli.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, like, Jeremy got, like, hella mad and then we're, like, laughing together. And I just told him MYOB. And that means mind your own business.
Wow. Wow. Well, that, unfortunately, I think is all the time we have for today. But I want to thank you, Mandy, for coming on the show. Again, Miss Valley Girl 2006, for really letting us know what's going on there in the youth culture today.
Well, thanks, Mr. Petrilli. H&K.
H&K?
Hugs and kisses.
Oh, well. Well, thank you, Mandy. And it's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely, Mr. Petrilli. I really looked forward to it.
So what do you think, Rick? Mandy made a pretty compelling case that, you know, those of us older than, I don't know, 25 just don't get it. But is this really a good idea to let kids use text speak on their tests?
It's certainly reduced my regard for New Zealand.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
What are they thinking?
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard to understand. I guess they're just hip to the times, my friend.
I mean, you know, kids have always had different lingo, but didn't mean that you in the 70s accepted groovy as an appropriate descriptor for an SAT essay.
Is that right? You didn't put that on your AP history exam?
I think I tried, but I believe I was marked down for it.
Ah, okay. That's too bad. All right. Well, it's time for everyone's favorite education news of the weird with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's with the short shorts and the knee-high tube socks?
It's a tribute, Mike. Apparently, I'm not the only Liam Julian involved in education.
Huh.
Liam Julian, a talented rugby player who was selected for the Irish team in the 2004 Student World Cup, recently broke his leg during a match. The accident meant a week in the hospital and 4 months recuperating at home. It also meant that his dreams of joining the police force were in tatters. The Bishop Burton College website reads, quote, "With a resolve that belies his 22 years, Liam returned to work at Bishop Burton and quickly settled back into college life. So much so that after assisting the sports coaches at the college and helping with school's visits, Liam decided that he would take a certificate in education and turn his attention to becoming a teacher.
Yay.
He has recently accepted a job at a local high school and is looking forward to his new career." Unquote. So, Rick, are there any other Rick Hesses working in international think tanks?
I never even thought to look. That would be so cool. There is a Peter Petrilli on NBC's Heroes, that's now true. Averaging 15 million a week on Monday nights.
That's not bad exposure. Liam, I want to ask you this, though. How did you figure out that there is another Liam Julian out there?
Did you Google yourself?
Did you Google yourself? That's the question.
I tend to Google my own name at least 7-8 times a day.
Yeah.
As well you should.
You never know what's out there.
No.
Yeah.
No, and so now, where did this guy pop up? Was this the first link because he got injured and got all that sympathy stuff?
Well, it's on their website. They put up a special page for him, kind of a tribute. There's a picture of him playing rugby. It looks like he's about to kick the oblong ball.
Are you asking or is that a statement?
I don't know what they call it over there.
Well, I have to admit that perhaps on occasion I have Googled my own name, you know.
Everybody does.
Oh, please. Well. Turns out there's actually a Petrilli who is also a rugby player in Argentina.
Wow.
Really?
No kidding. So there's this whole alternative universe of education reform-related rugby players. And maybe someday we should challenge them.
I want to find the other Reg Weaver.
Yeah. Is that right?
Maybe he probably plays for, like, you know, he plays out there for France or Malaysia or Mozambique or somebody, and he's probably, you know, popping away. How fun would it be to get to the two Reg Weavers together? Mm-hmm. They could talk about Southwest.
This is a very interesting idea. I'd like to get the real Rick Hess, who once upon a time would have taken Reg Weaver on instead of being all mamby-pamby about him. But maybe he will return after the Thanksgiving holiday. We are taking next week off,
yes.
Of course, for Turkey Day.
Oof.
Rick, up with your family in Baltimore for your traditional
flag football game? Yes, and let's hope that this year I can bring my game for the first time in a decade.
Well, good. Well, that is all the time we have. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at edexcellence.net.
Go Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
That's right. Till a couple weeks from now.
Hi. Oh, I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli. Go Blue of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation.
Do you even know Michigan's record, Mike?
I do. They're undefeated.
How many games have they won?
Around 10.
Okay.
And they're going to win another one on Saturday and head to the national championship. Till then, we're signing off. Talk to you next time.